The Wicked Smart Sports Guys is brought to you by SumaxBatteries.com, the go-to website for all your battery needs. SumaX Batteries compares in quality to well-known national brands, and the best part, SumaX Batteries are priced much lower than their competitors. They carry a full line of super heavy-duty ultra-alkaline lithium and button cell batteries. Flashlights, remote controls, game controls, headphones, digital cameras, hearing aids, smart alarms, whatever device you need a battery for, SumaX has the best batteries at the best price for your device. You can order a 24-pack of AA or AAA heavy-duty batteries for only $5.99, or a 24-pack of ultra-alkaline, ideal for all kinds of gaming and high-tech devices, at just $12.99. Order today and use coupon code BOSTON, that's coupon code BOSTON, all uppercase at checkout, and save 20% off your entire order. Once again, that's coupon code BOSTON, all uppercase at checkout, and save big today. SumaxBatteries.com, CellamaxBatteries.com, the official sponsor of the Wicked Smart Sports Guys. All right, welcome back to another episode of the Wicked Smart Sports Guys podcast. Thanks as always to Dolly Dreams for the intro music. This week, we're joined by one of the lead voices over at Celtics Blog, friend of the show from across the pond, Adam Taylor, and we're going to talk about the Celtics offseason that was. Is it over? It feels like it just started. In fact, it did just start, but it might already be done, and we're going to discuss that with Adam. Adam, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. How's it going?
Great, great. Well, the Celtics offseason, you know, we'll get into how we feel about it. I'll explain that, because that has a big impact on how I'm feeling. But we'll start with the biggest news, which is the Gordon Hayward news. He heads to the Hornets, 4 years, $120 million. What was your, I just want your instant reaction, what was your immediate reaction when you saw that come across your Twitter feed?
That dude got paid. That was literally it. There was no way on earth that I would have been happy with Boston giving him that deal. I can also understand completely why Indiana didn't give him that deal. I don't understand how he warrants that deal. But if someone comes to you and offers you $120 million, fully guaranteed for the entire contract, and, you know, money talks, it's a decision that makes itself.
Yeah, it was a huge, huge surprise to me as well. I did not think he was going to get that much at all in free agency. I don't think most people thought he was going to get that much. And on the one hand, I'm not totally surprised it was the Hornets that offered it, because you got to figure if he was going to go to a team like the Hornets or the Knicks, they were going to have to give him that type of contract. Like, he wasn't going to go to some basement dwelling for at least last season Eastern Conference team unless he really got a big payday. So it makes sense that the Hornets had to pony that up to get him. But even still, if you're the Hornets, you know, that is a lot of money to give Gordon Hayward. And by the way, I'm not totally against this signing, or I don't think it's could be horrible. I think it could be really good. I think Gordon Hayward could be an all-star for Charlotte, and obviously Charlotte thinks that as well if they're willing to pay him that much money. But when you look at what he did in Boston, you know, 17 points per game, over 17 points per game last season on 50% shooting as the fourth option. You make him the first option in Charlotte, yeah, he could be an all-star next year. He could be, you know. Can he stay healthy is a big question, but I will reiterate something I expressed the last few days on Twitter, is that Gordon Hayward played 80% of the games for the Celtics over the last two seasons. So he really doesn't get banged up as much as it's perceived that he does. So if he can stay healthy for 80% of the games for Charlotte, and he can, you know, average 20 points per game on, you know, 47% shooting, that's not an indefensible contract. In fact, when you look at some of the other deals across the league, you know, your Mike Conley deals, for example, that's not too bad at all.
Yeah, he could definitely earn himself an all-star appearance, especially playing in Charlotte. Now they're going to be very up-tempo. Guys like LaMelo Moore, Devontae Graham, PJ Washington, these guys like to get out and run. They're going to be very electric in terms of fast break opportunities and attacking teams before their defenses get set. I've got it down as Hayward probably picking up like 24, 8, and 6 if he has a fully healthy season and really gets bought into whatever they're trying to do down in Charlotte. I see at least one more All-Star appearance throughout this contract, maybe two. I do worry about the type of workload they're going to put on him. If you look at how they kind of ramp that usage up on Kemba throughout his career and how much wear and tear is on Kemba's body because of the way Charlotte relied on him so heavily. And then you look at how Hayward was mentioning his leg was still hurting through the season. He was getting pains in his foot and they couldn't really figure out why. That's where the worry starts to come into it for me. You're paying this dude $120 million over 4 years. and you know he's coming in with a long-term health concern around that foot and the ankle, can the first 2 years of this contract be great? Yeah. Can the last 2 years of the contract be great? And that's where the question's going to be. It's the tail end of the contract that's going to start looking bad, in my personal opinion.
So you question whether he can manage the workload of a number one player anymore.
Yeah, so I feel like he's got the talent and he's more than capable of being the number one option on a team. But can his body sustain the usage rate that it's required from being that number one?
I think that's fair. You know, I think going back to the All-Star thing, I hope he makes the All-Star game again. I think it's going to depend a lot on what kind of team Charlotte is. You know, are they winning? And then you see that with a lot of guys. Can he, you know, get in the playoffs? A lot of people didn't want Trae Young in the All-Star game last year because, yes, he was playing really well, but the Hawks were terrible. So that's going to come into play for Hayward as well. The Hornets need to win if he's going to be seriously considered there. And when I look at their team right now, I don't know if they're a playoff team. I guess last season, they were technically, is this right? I need to check this. They were technically ninth in the, is this right? I'm trying to look at this. They were ninth in the Eastern Conference, or I guess the Wizards, that's what happened. The Wizards kind of fell out of it because they fell out of that place because of the, you know, whole deal with the bubble and everything, because they were allowed in the bubble for some stupid reason. So their winning percentage ended up being lower, but they were originally ninth. So I was confused about that for a second. But obviously they jump up in the draft lottery. They get LaMelo. But the thing about it is that they were, you know, relatively high in the standings there. But I guess, you know, compared to teams that missed the playoffs, but they were kind of grouped in with that whole, you know, group of Eastern Conference basement dwellers. I mean, if you look at last place to, you know, I guess ninth place with in the Eastern Conference standings, like 4 wins separated last place to ninth place, while 10 wins separated eighth place to ninth place. So there's a huge gap there. And it was all, they were all kind of in the same boat, all those teams that missed the playoffs in the Eastern Conference with how bad they all were. So it's really hard for me to look at Charlotte and does Gordon Hayward vault them into the playoffs? Because yes, they were only 10 games out, I guess if you want to say, 10 wins short of where Orlando was. However, the issue is, I guess the bubble, you know, this is so hard. I'm trying to do this all in real time. The bubble factors into Orlando's win total too. So yeah, there were 10 games, but I guess they were only 6 games back. It's so confusing because of everything that happened with the bubble and teams that didn't go. Here's the point. I look at the Eastern Conference and I see 6 teams that I look at as locks for the playoffs. The Bucks, the Raptors, the Celtics, the Heat, the Sixers, and the Nets. All locks. No chance any of those teams miss it. I didn't include the Pacers there. I maybe should. I just, you know, I'll put them as 7th. I don't think they're quite on the level of those other 6 teams. So the Pacers are maybe that 7 seed. And then you have the Magic. You have the Hawks. You have the Wizards if John Wall comes back and he's good at all. And you have the Hornets. And out of those 4 teams, with the additions the Hawks made, I think I'm taking the Hawks over the Hornets right now in the postseason. It's hard for me to think Gordon Hayward is enough to propel them in the playoffs with the kind of competition in the East, which is much improved this season. The East isn't going to be, you know, your slightly older brother's Eastern Conference or your maybe your young dad's Eastern Conference, because that Eastern Conference next year, I think it's shaping up to be pretty competitive and pretty good, at least in the top 8 or 9. It's not going to be like the West, which is 13, 14 deep, but it's going to be a competitive playoff field.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the other thing is as well that Atlanta went out knowing that they needed to add defense to their roster after being so abjectly poor last year. They go and get Rondo. You know, everyone knows Rondo's perimeter defense. He may have fell off a little bit, but he's still a fierce competitor. Really hates it when guys beat him. And then they go and get Chris Dunn, that I look at as like a poor man's Marcus Smart. Likes to throw himself in front of plays, very aggressive. I feel like Charlotte are a year behind where Atlanta are now. So the Hornets are going to be electric on offense. They're going to be run and gun. There's going to be some highlight passes, some great plays. On defense, they're going to be a train wreck. I feel like Hayward's gone in there and instantly became their best defensive player. And I just don't know where their secondary defensive guy is on that roster. And to me, I feel like this is an 8th seed or bust type of move from the Hornets. And it's going to be a bust. I've got them finishing between 10th and 9th this year. Maybe Hayward's enough to add, 6 wins over the course of a season? And even that isn't going to be enough to keep up with Atlanta, unless Atlanta just don't figure out how to put it on the floor.
I mean, they have a decent lineup. It's not bad. Like, Devontae Graham, LaMelo Ball, depending on what LaMelo Ball is, and there's a lot unknown there. And you have Hayward, PJ Washington, you have Bridges too at center. Maybe they play Zeller. Like, it's not terrible. It's a decent lineup. I just don't know when you're looking at the East that they have enough to, you know, get ahead of these other teams that I'm looking at. And I didn't even mention the Magic, who you got to give respect to. They've been a playoff team the last couple of years here, and there could be some improvement there too. You know, they're without Jonathan Isaac now, so, you know, who knows how that's going to turn out. But I don't know if they have enough. And that's why I was surprised I made the Hayward move without trading for Westbrook, because we heard them involved in those Russell Westbrook rumors so much, right? And it was, to me, I actually talked about the Hornets as a possibility for Hayward back when I had Jack Simone on the podcast just a few days back before free agency kicked off, and we talked about them briefly, and I said, you know, I could see the Hornets being a team that Hayward could go to if they get Russell Westbrook, because I like the idea of Hayward as a number two to Westbrook, or, you know, I guess, yeah, he would be a number two to Westbrook, even though people are not very high on Westbrook right now. But I thought that those two could potentially work together pretty well. There's a yin and yang there a little bit, I think, between Westbrook and Hayward. They can both do some different things, and they could be a nice combo, I think. But if it sounds like maybe they're not interested in Westbrook now, because, you know, they said if we didn't draft LaMelo Ball, maybe we'd be more interested in Westbrook, but now we're not. Like, if you're going out and making a win now move and signing Hayward, I just think it would behoove them, if they're that's really what they're all about and what they want to do, to go out and deal for Westbrook and make LaMelo Ball your number three for now, your number three star. And is that going to stifle his future? I don't know. It didn't hurt Jason Tatum too much when he was in Boston and he was, you know, only averaging 13 points per game in his rookie year behind, you know, Kyrie and Al, I guess you could say Al Horford. I don't know what the actual scoring outline was on that team. But Hayward, I would assume Horford had a higher usage rate because he was also very involved as a facilitating big. But either way, the point being that I think LaMelo Ball's future won't be too stifled if you have two guys ahead of him as, you know, leading the team next season. If it's Westbrook, maybe you can make a different argument because Westbrook maybe isn't the best with how much he does have the ball and, you know, helping other players succeed and thrive as well. But if you're the Hornets and you want to win now, to me, if you're grabbing Hayward, you might as well get Westbrook too.
Yeah, one of the things that I look at when I'm looking at the Hornets is what's their long-term game plan. So obviously they're going to be banking on PJ Washington developing. Devontae Graham showing that he is going to keep on developing. If you can get reasonable defense out of LaMelo in a year or two, and he can alter his shot selection to be a lot more judicial with what he chooses to fire off and what he chooses to pass on, and then you can go into next year's free agency with a deep free agent class and try and sell someone on, like, hey, we've got Hayward as a vet, we've got Washington is just coming off his sophomore year, we've got Graham, and then we've got LaMelo heading into his sophomore year. Can you entice that extra player, that missing piece, to come and pay a little bit over the odds? Because they should still have some cap room next year, as far as I'm aware. When you're looking at Westbrook, I'm not sure that would work, simply because of egos. I feel like Hayward's gone there to be the number one option, and if he'd got there and then found out, hey, you're going to play number two or number three behind Westbrook, and, you know, if they really do want to push LaMelo's development, then maybe they want the ball in his hands more. So I think that might have kind of swayed Hayward against that decision as well, about moving there if he knew he was going to be the third option. Why be the second or third option in Charlotte and not make the playoffs when you could be the third or fourth option in Boston and contend for a championship? And this, to me, this whole saga has shown what Hayward's end game was. Did he want to play for a contender? No, because then he'd be in Boston. Did he want to go home? No, because then he'd be in Indiana. What he wanted was to pick up that last big paycheck, and he succeeded, and he's going to get paid really, really well.
I was just going to say, I think that does make sense for Charlotte, for Hayward, rather. I think that does everything. I agree with 100%. I agree with the fact he wanted to go there. He wanted to be a superstar, and that's why he went to Charlotte. And if you're Hayward, that factors in the decision. And if you're Charlotte, that's what you sold him on. But now that you have him, if you're Charlotte, doesn't the equation change? Like, all right, we got Hayward now. Now we decide if we want Westbrook too. And if you're Hayward, you already signed on the dotted line. You're just going to have to deal with it. Like, there's not much you can do now. Our goal isn't to boost you up and make you the star. Our goal is to win a championship, or, you know, at least make the playoffs if you're Charlotte, and be as good as we can be. So, I get what you're saying. Hayward wouldn't have gone there if that was the case. Things can change, and, you know, you say what you do to get the guy there, and then you do what's best for your team, which might be to bring in Westbrook, at least in the short term.
Yeah, the only thing with that is the NBA is like a big boys club, right? They all talk, they all tell each other everything. They're all friends off the court. It's like a it's like a very exclusive members club. So if I'm Hayward and that happens to me, I'm telling everybody, like, hey, this is what they sold me on. They've bought me in, and they just lied to me to get me through the door. If you come here, expect the same to happen.
But does that matter when you're talking about Charlotte, though? Like, how many guys are going to Charlotte anyway? Like, I feel like I do understand what you're saying, and it wouldn't be the best move, but I guess from a relationship standpoint with Hayward, but I just think that at the end of the day, I feel like Hayward's going to get over it, and I do feel like even with Westbrook there, Hayward's still going to be a bigger part of the offense. He could still be an all-star. You could still average 20. Like, you know, I still think that's in the cards for Hayward. I don't think what you were saying, like 24, is in play anymore. I think, you know, it's possible that he could do that if he was the number one guy in Charlotte, for sure. But if Westbrook's there, his ceiling's probably 21, maybe 22 at best, like in a perfect world. But it's probably around 20, 21. So, I still think he could be really good, and, you know, he can get more of that spotlight. Because like I said, you know, that's all great. You know, Hayward, you can be the star there. You can be averaging 24 points per game. But if you're in 11th place and your winning percentage is 400, then you're not making the All-Star game either. So at the end of the day, Westbrook might be, you know, might help you become that star you want to be too. You know, it's hard to win by yourself. And I really don't think he can do it by himself in Charlotte.
Yeah, and I completely agree. Just to counter it, when you said, oh, but does it matter for Charlotte? I think it matters more for these bottom-feeding teams than the optics matter way more for a team that's generally trash regularly, like consistently poor teams. The optics need to be a lot better for them, because you can't sell a team on coming in and contending or on a good basketball culture with good coaching philosophies. You have to sell them on, hey, we keep our word and we're going to pay you ridiculous money. I do agree, though, Westbrook would be a perfect fit in terms of, you know, he's... him and Hayward, that's an eighth seed in the East at worst, I feel like. If you can go and pick up a stretch big, then maybe Hayward and a stretch big can probably get you there as well, along with LaMelo Ball. But I just don't see where they've got no cap space now. So I don't, for this year anyway, they're capped out where they will be after they bring in Hayward. So I don't see where that next move comes from or what contracts they can use to match Westbrook's salary, because that is an exuberantly big salary.
Well, I'll give it to you. I mean, the idea would be, and this is all very convoluted. It would be very tough to make all this work, especially with the reports out there now of what they're doing. And it's so weird. I don't know if they've even officially waived and stretched Batum yet, or if they're waiting to see if they can get a sign and trade done with Boston, and then they can do it. But the idea would be, you somehow sign and trade Rozier away for Hayward. Maybe Rozier comes back to Boston. Maybe he doesn't. Maybe he goes to the Clippers. The Celtics facilitate him going to the Clippers somehow. Whatever it may be. Maybe they get Lou Williams. I'm just throwing this stuff against the wall. Okay? So the idea would be that if you want Westbrook, you sign and trade Hayward. You trade Rozier's contract away. And then you trade Batum and maybe a pick to sweeten the deal. And one other contract to match Westbrook's salary, and that's how you get Westbrook. So that's the way it's possible. I know there's a lot of pending transactions that could make that a moot point, but that would be the idea. Again, the reports maybe make that seem even more unlikely. But again, we didn't think Hayward was going to Charlotte in the first place. So who knows at this point? Maybe, you know, they can always pull something out of the hat. That's how the NBA works. Anything can happen at any time.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's definitely possible. I don't think Rozier would end up back in Boston just because of the way he burnt his bridges on the way out the door.
No.
But, hey, the Clippers need a backup guard. There's a couple of teams out there that could do with somebody like Rozier coming off the bench. You have to sell Rozier in the fact that he's moving on from a starting point guard position, which I feel like is going to happen anyway. I mean, are you going to start LaMelo over Rozier? I think you would after drafting him so high.
Yeah, and Rozier and Hayward, by the way, I don't know if you've seen some of the same stuff kind of in the really underground NBA rumor circle, but it doesn't sound like Rozier and Hayward had the best relationship either.
Oh, no, they've got... that's very well rumored that those two don't get on. So maybe that's another reason why Rozier could be on his way out. And for Boston, the best circumstances that could come from this is there's a sign and trade that, you know, you bring a third team in, Boston take back zero salary, maybe take a second round pick for helping facilitate a free team deal, and then get that huge Hayward trade TPE, which is going to be very beneficial for them moving towards the trade deadline or into next summer's free agency.
So just last thing on Hayward, what did you make of the whole Pacers sign and trade situation? Were you disappointed nothing happened there? Were you ultimately fine with it? What was your overall thought on that kind of mess?
So I like to imagine it as like you've got Danny Ainge and those guys in one room on a video call with the guys in the with the Pacers. And then Mark Burlestein, if that's how you say his name, I've probably butchered that. Hayward's agent calls up and like, hey, I don't know where you guys are at, where you guys are at with negotiations, but Charlotte just offered Hayward $120 million. So that's now the benchmark. If you guys can't make that work, then we're going to Charlotte, at which point Indiana hung up the phone. That tends to be my mentality with it. I feel like if Hayward wanted to go to Indiana, this all comes down to what Hayward wanted at the end of the day. He had all the power. If Hayward wanted to go to Indiana, he'd be in Indiana. They would have a deal would have eventually been struck because Danny Ainge doesn't like to lose an asset for nothing.
I think that's a fair outlook. I also think there's a possibility that that's not the case. I wouldn't rule out Danny Ainge and Kevin Pritchard's disdain for one another. I think that it's possible that that played a big, big factor in these negotiations. And eventually, maybe Hayward just viewed Charlotte and Indiana as, I'll take either one. And when nothing was happening with Indiana, he said, you know what, I'll just take the Charlotte thing. Like, that's always possible too, you know. Of course, you can have his number one and number two options, but maybe he didn't view them as all that different in his mind, or at least when you're, you know, stacking all the benefits up of this team can win, this team can offer me more money, you know, you're weighing the pros and cons, they came out pretty equal, and he said, you know what, I'll just go to Charlotte, this is way easier. I'm just throwing that out there. Overall, I'm not too torn apart about the fact that the Celtics didn't get a sign and trade done with Indiana. Miles Turner got less and less appealing as the days went on, to be quite honest. I mean, it seemed like every day you were learning more about Miles Turner that was not to like, and it all culminated with Zach Lowe saying recently on his podcast that the Celtics asked around the league to see, hey, if we get Miles Turner, maybe we have him for, you know, a few months here and we decide we don't like him, what could we get for him? What is his trade market? And teams around the league were not high on Turner at all either, and they weren't willing to give up much for him. And the Celtics said, you know what, this isn't worth it for us. We just don't want Miles Turner. We think he's a negative asset. And if they came to that conclusion, you shouldn't make that deal. You shouldn't help Indiana get better at the expense of, you know, hurting yourself long term if you think Miles Turner is eventually ultimately going to be a detriment to your team, which could be true, because if Turner's, if you figure out, all right, Turner's really hurting us on the court, we have to put him on the bench, you start Tice over him, then you have a locker room problem with Turner being upset, and now he wants out and you can't trade him anywhere. Like, maybe it was more trouble than it was worth ultimately, and that's kind of the conclusion I've come to.
Yeah, and I can agree with that. I mean, Turner would have came in as a great upgrade in terms of three-point shooting from the five position, and he probably would have been the best rim protector on that roster from day one, and that's no shade towards Robert Williams. I just think Robert Williams needs to learn not to bite on every pump fake before he can be classed as the best rim protector on that roster.
The biggest thing I want to say is that there's a reason Indiana was so eager to get rid of him. There's a reason he was the first name thrown out there. And by the way, a lot of these reports you're seeing about the Celtics were being impatient, the Celtics wanted more, the Celtics were being greedy, that is coming from Indiana people. It's coming from the Indiana side of things. Like, it's Indiana reporters at The Athletic who are putting that out there. So, of course, that's what Indiana is going to tell you.
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing that I've been very vocal on over the last couple of weeks is the reports that you see, they get leaked for certain reasons, whether it's the front office leaking the rumor, the player's agent, or the player himself. You only see what they want you to see, and a lot of it is smoke screens. So reading too much into the reports that everybody's putting out there is simply allowing these teams to go down their path while they've sent, it's like diverting traffic, right? You've got somebody standing there and they're diverting all media and fan attention down one way while realistically pursuing an option down an empty way where there's less eyes on what's going on. And then if it doesn't work, nobody knows. And if it does work, hey, we're a genius. We pulled off this trade without anybody realizing it was going to happen. And that ultimately is what happened with Hayward and Charlotte. Everybody was so focused on New York and Indiana that when Charlotte did drop, although we always knew they were a possibility, they were the furthest thought from our minds because of the way information had been released into the media to keep our focus on something different.
All right, let's move on to Tristan Thompson now. Move away from the Hayward stuff. What did you make of the Tristan Thompson signing? What do you like about him and the deal overall?
Originally, I was very upset. I even tweeted out saying, I am very upset. For me, it was just more along the lines of, hey, you've brought in a guy that's pretty much exactly what Robert Williams is, except a little bit stronger, and obviously a vet, so he understands the league. But how does that help Robert Williams' development? I didn't want to get too set in my ways early, so I went back and watched every defensive possession he had last season. Kind of tried to look at it from a point of view of, okay, so this is the how he played that possession, but how would that have looked in Boston? How would that have looked with Jaylen Brown on playing on ball defender and Jason Tatum closing that passing lane off? And kind of trying to mentally plug the Celtics guys in around him. I'm a lot higher on him now since I did that. I feel like he's going to fit really well. The questions I had about Robert Williams' development, I actually think that Tristan Thompson's going to be good for that. I think that he's going to be a great vet for Robert Williams. He's going to be the guy like, hey, don't do this. Position yourself here. Get lower. Make sure you're pushing up into the back of them and taking them, like, taking the power away from their legs. And he's also an enforcer, and that's what Boston's missed, right? Somebody that if you knock one of the guys over on one play, the next time down the court, Tristan Thompson's going to make sure you taste the floor, and he's going to smile while doing so. And you need those guys. You need those dirty guys, the ones that are willing to kind of throw an elbow here and there and make sure that you feel his presence so that you think twice before attacking the rim, especially these younger point guards that are really nifty but don't have too much strength. Tristan Thompson's the guy that's going to make them really question getting deep into the paint.
Yeah, and Robert Williams, by the way, is a little bit of an overrated rebounder. Like, he's not the same rebounder that you're getting in a guy like Tristan Thompson. Thompson is one of the best rebounders of all time. I think I looked it up the other day, and he is 8th all-time in offensive rebound percentage and 2nd among active players, only behind DeAndre Jordan, it was Andre Drummond is the only one he's behind, which, you know, Andre Drummond, we know he has some other problems, of course. All right, so Robert Williams isn't quite the rebounder Thompson is either. He you know, just not as good at grabbing boards as he should be with his athleticism, and maybe a little bit better as a shot blocker overall, but like you said, kind of too eager on biting on those pump fakes. And the other thing about Thompson that you have to really like is his championship experience, because Boston last year didn't have a single player who'd even played in an NBA Finals game. Never mind won one, which Thompson, has won a championship and has played in 22 Finals games. Had quite the stretch of consecutive years in the Finals there, thanks to a certain guy around there. So those are the two things to me that you have to like most about Thompson. The three-point shooting, you know, it started to come along a little bit last year. I don't totally trust it because he still is a bad free throw shooter. I don't think he's going to come here. I don't think he's going to shoot 83s and hit 40% of them. But, you know, could he hit at least, you know, could he be what Amir Johnson kind of was behind the line for you? If you remember that, Amir Johnson, he would throw up a couple every now and then and some of them would go in. I think that's what more the shooter you're looking at if you try to get Tristan Thompson to stand out there, which is, you know, not good, but at least he can hit one every now and then. So I think maybe that's what the Celtics should be hoping for. And at the end of the day, it could be helpful because it is hard to play when you have a guy that has to be in the middle at all times and really clogs up those driving lanes for Jason Tatum. So if Tristan Thompson's defender at least can't leave him totally open, he at least has to have a foot out of the paint when Thompson's on the three-point line, I think that's worth it for the other things he can give you.
Yeah, I completely agree. I feel like three-point shooting for Thompson is not necessary. It would be a nice perk. I feel like we saw this with Aaron Baines as well. When Baines first came to the team, he wasn't really seen as a three-point shooter. He was one that would attempt one here and there. And then over his time in Boston and then moving into Phoenix, he's worked on that, and now he's become quite a reliable outlet from deep. Another thing with Thompson as well is his switchability. The guy can switch off pick and rolls and guard lower positions. And he's quite versatile in terms of his hip dexterity, the way he can change directions. So I'm curious to see what he's going to be like as a roll man, as a lob threat, as a post-entry threat. Those are things that Boston didn't really have. They had them a little bit in Enes Kanter, but Kanter's flexibility and his ability to change pace and move on a dime just were non-existent. So I feel like he's going to really open up that driving dish game as well. But I would really like it if Thompson early showed some flashes of at least some short roll awareness as well, because that'll really help with the wings, guys like Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, when they're cutting in on motion. Having a guy that can hit a dime off a short roll will help with those traps that are coming at these guys.
The interesting thing to me is Tristan Thompson versus Daniel Tice and who starts. And I think that's going to be kind of a back and forth battle all season, and we'll see that switch up a lot. But where do you kind of stand on that? I think if you, gun to my head, made me pick, I'd pick Tristan Thompson, but I'm just, you know, I'm not confident that the Celtics are going to go that way.
Yeah, for me, a lot of it's down to matchup dependent. I feel like Tristan Thompson will probably get some opportunities to show that he could start, but Daniel Tice has kind of earned that right to begin with. So I feel like we're going to see opening night that we'll see Daniel Tice, depending on matchup. Obviously, if you're against someone like Andre Drummond, then you'll see Thompson start. But over the course of the season, and especially during the playoffs, I feel like Tristan Thompson's going to be the starting big. Throughout the regular season, I feel like, yeah, the same as you, it's going to be a battle. But overall, Tristan Thompson is the better center, and I feel like we probably even see some Tristan Thompson, Daniel Tice at the 4 and 5. Now, that's going to kill the floor spacing completely, so I don't expect to see that for large amounts of minutes per game. But I'd be intrigued to see that. I mean, Tice came into the league as a bona fide 4. It's only been because of the Celtics' kind of weird rust construction around bigs that have seen Tice moved up to the 5. But overall, I do think that Thompson, if it was going to be a straight who's the better center, then Thompson should win that because he's more experienced, he's stronger, he's probably a little bit faster, but he just doesn't offer the same basketball IQ as what Tice does.
All right, what do you make of Jeff Teague, bringing in Teague? Because a guy that way back when, a former All-Star, really only because Atlanta had so many wins that season, they gave him a few All-Stars, and they gave him like 4 All-Stars, and they were in the East because they were having such a spectacular regular season. But Teague, a really good player. I threw this stat out the other day just on Twitter. Players that have had over 9,000 points, 4,000 assists, and under 2,000 turnovers over the last 10 years in the NBA, the last 10 seasons. You're looking at Chris Paul, Steph Curry, Damian Lillard, 3 great ones, and then Kyle Lowry, Drew Holiday, 2 really good ones, and then Jeff Teague. So some pretty solid company for Teague to be in there. A really good backup. I think you're looking at probably one of the best backup point guards in the league.
Oh, for sure. This is a huge upgrade over Brad Wanamaker, and that's no shade at Brad. I feel like he's going to be a secondary creator off the bench, depending, and that's operating under the assumption that he's going to be playing against some staggered starters. Like, Jay, he might spend time with Tatum, or he might spend time with Kemba, maybe as a 2, but I doubt it. Or he might spend time with Marcus Smart. So I see him as a secondary shot creator for that bench unit. He's averaged 5.8 assists over his career, so he's not shy of dishing the ball. He can score 35.8% over his career from deep, and he's going to be a driving dish threat as well. The bench unit was the huge issue for me throughout the regular season and the playoffs. It stagnated far too much. Teague's a very, very savvy vet. He understands how to keep an offense ticking, and he's going to be exactly what guys like Romeo Langford, Nesmith, Grant Williams, Rob Williams, they all need somebody like that. Somebody that's been there and done it thousands of times, that's going to be able to keep their heads from dropping if they go on a small run. I think Teague's going to be one of the more low-key pickups for the season that's actually going to work out really well. One-year deal, it's a low-risk, high-reward kind of strategy. I don't understand why anyone wouldn't like this move, to be quite honest.
And from the standpoint of replacing Hayward, I am really still concerned about who's going to pick up the scoring load. I'm not concerned about who's going to pick up the playmaking load, because that is what you bring in Jeff Teague for. He's going to help tremendously in replacing the facilitation that Hayward brought to the team. So to me, it's like you said, even if Teague you want to consider, like, because I've thought about this too, maybe not one of the top 5 backup point guards in the league, because those guys, you're talking about, you know, obviously Dennis Schroeder last year now, who knows what the situation, who knows how the Lakers rotation is going to shake out. But like those type of guys are getting paid 15, 16 million a year. So those are really the elite of the elite guys at the back point guard position. But Teague, still, I mean, like you said, a huge upgrade over Wanamaker, who was, to be quite frank about it, one of the worst backup point guards in the league over the last few years. And Teague is just going to be, it's going to be night and day. And a guy that started in the league, if Kemba, you know, especially misses some games with, you know, whether it's load management with his knee or whatever type of issues pop up, Teague is a guy that you can slot in there and can start a number of games for you and be really, really solid. So, I think that this is, like you said, one of the most low-key moves of the offseason, but one of the most important they could have made, because if Kemba is going to miss some time here, you need a guy like Teague who is, you know, comfortable starting in the NBA and has done it before for a very good teams.
Yeah, for sure. It's also good in terms of whenever I see a vet come in, I look at the young guys in that position around him that are going to be benefiting from playing. You know, like SGA did with playing with Chris Paul. They pick things up, they learn a few tricks along the way, and then when that vet moves on, these rookies are better for that experience. You look at guys like Peyton Pritchard. He's going to be coming into the Celtics setup now, and he's going to be learning from Kemba Walker and Jeff Teague, two very, very respectable names within the league who have both been doing it for a long time, and that's only going to be a good thing for him. I'm a bit concerned where the scoring load's going to come from as well, but I'm a little bit less concerned because the Celtics have moved to kind of address that bench scoring that was an issue last year. Teague's going to be able to score some. That's going to take a few of the pains away from Hayward leaving. I'm not expecting him to score 17 a night. You know, if he can average 8 points a night, then that's great. Pritchard will be able to. Neesmith will add some shooting as well. And then maybe, just maybe, we might actually see Carson Edwards figure out how to put a ball in the hole, but I wouldn't hold your breath too much there.
Yeah, or Romeo Langford. So again, the scoring is TBD. We'll see if and where it comes from anybody, but you know, I think that the playmaking is not a concern I have anymore. Let's get to the last thing we're going to talk about here, really, is Tatum's extension. I think people, to me, and I don't mean to, you know, rain on anybody's parade here, a little too excited about it. Like, this was an inevitability all along. On the other hand, I see some people who, I don't want to name names, there are some people who questioned whether this was going to happen, and then when it happened are now saying, whoa, well, this was obvious. And it's like kind of being the, you know, the just me, like, horrible people in this kind of industry that are kind of just trying to be controversial all the time. Like, well, Tatum's a free agent, he might leave, and now saying, well, it was obvious. Like, I was kind of in this boat the whole time of, this is going to happen, players sign extensions in this spot, everybody does, it never doesn't happen. The only one that I can remember in recent years who this was even a question with was, like, Kristaps Porzingis with the Knicks, and he was like, oh, I'm not going to sign it, I'm going to sign my qualifying offer. Then he got traded to the Mavericks, and he even told them, I'm going to sign my qualifying offer and become an unrestricted free agent the next year. And then he didn't. He just signed his extension once he had free agency, and that was the end of it. He signed his, you know, for long-term in Dallas. So guys just you don't see that happen in the NBA. Guys always sign these extensions. So I wasn't, like, partying in the streets because I really expected this to happen like some other people were. But, you know, still a good thing. Still a very good thing to have happened, and you're happy to get Tatum now for at least the next 5 years, being, you know, the last year of his rookie deal and the first four of his extension before the player option.
Yeah, I mean, that makes a good point. Like, these guys aren't going to decline their first extension because it's their first taste of real money. I am a bit concerned about that player option. I understand why he fought for it, and I understand why Boston kind of submitted and gave him that player option on the fifth year. I'm only concerned because the last two player options Boston have dealt with have turned out absolutely awful, and obviously, you don't want it to be freezer charm sort of thing. But Tatum's happy. He's going to keep getting better. I feel like the contract value is good. It's a very heavily incentivized for him to reach that $195 million. Same as Jaylen Brown's was. And I'm cool with that. You want to incentivize these guys. If you look at what Brandon Ingram got, who signed his extension today, that was, I think it was $163 million. So you can see the disparity in which guys earning more based on incentives. I don't think they've very much incentivized Ingram to hit some additional targets, but that's what you need to do if you want your guys to keep pushing to be one of the best players in the league. You need to keep incentivizing them and making it about financial gains. I feel like Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum for the next 4-5 years are going to become one of the best duos in the league. But now it's all about, how do you keep these guys happy? How do you put a team on the floor that's capable of contending over the next 5, 6, 7, 8 years to entice these guys to not only playing through this contract, but then signing their next contract with the team?
Yeah, and this is something I won't get on people for bringing up, is that the clock is ticking. You have 5 years with Jason Tatum. You have to win a championship in that time, or you really risk him leaving. And I will say, I'm not as broken up about the player option as, you know, you seem to be, and you don't seem to be very broken up about it at all. But I just say that to say, you know, it's obvious these guys are getting player options. Everybody gets a player option. Every superstar player gets a player option. It's just what you have to give them. They've earned it. And the reason they want it isn't necessarily to leave, but it's, you know, if I'm injured, if I get injured, I want to have the ability to, you know, opt out or be able to opt into that money. And if I'm not injured, I want to have the ability to opt out before and not risk injury that following year to hurt my value. And obviously the cap is going up every single year. So I want to maximize, you know, my earning potential. And if, you know, I do reach that year and it's, you know, 40 million, or I can opt out and make 50 million or whatever the cap rises to, then I want to have those options. So the end kind of point I come to is just that these guys have earned it. Everybody gets one. It's really not a huge deal. It's something that you give every single player. It's just the way the league is, every single superstar player at least. And from Tatum's perspective, it's just, you know, it's not even necessarily to leave as much as it is about to get that bigger payday when the time comes and not have to, you know, play it out and only have 1 year, one option, you know, just to say it, of when you can enter free agency. And, you know, you give yourself multiple outs there to, you know, hedge against, you know, yourself getting injured and you know, get that big payday, next big payday when you want to get it. And as I said, great players like that, they've earned a right to have those options.
Oh yeah, for sure, no doubt, and they definitely earned them. And like you say, it is a lot more about maximizing earning potential than it is about upping and leaving. But if the Celtics can't put a winning product on the floor for more than a season, you know, if he only ever falls short in the conference finals for the next 5 years, I don't see him signing up for another 4 or 5 years of that. It's going to need to be more. There's going to need to be some finals appearances. There's going to need to be a championship ring. I'm not saying it has to be this year. I'm not saying it has to be next. But if you want to keep this guy long-term and Jaylen Brown long-term, then you need to find a way of consistently putting them in the finals or at least close to it.
Give me an overall grade for the offseason, your final grade for the Celtics offseason, your final thoughts. Assuming it's over, and you can, by the way, you can, I don't know if you want to argue this at all, but I think it's pretty much over. I think you got 15 players for 15 roster spots. It's pretty much filled out. That doesn't even include Taco when I look at it. I think they're done, barring something really unforeseen. But I'm ready to give a final grade. If you're not, you can express it and just give a temporary grade. I mean, obviously, the Hayward sign and trade thing is a given, that if that something changes there, then things can change as far as the grade goes. But for the most part, I think they're pretty much finished.
Yeah, so Taco Fall signed a two-way contract, so he'll be coming back on a two-way. So he won't be taking up a roster spot there. He signed that earlier today, actually.
Right. Well, I will say, I just want to preface, earlier today for you, of course, because as I did mention off the top, Adam is from across the pond, so technically it was yesterday here in the United States, but for Adam, it was very, very early this morning, I believe.
Yeah, that's true. Sorry. Yeah, that does. Do you know how many times that catches me out when I say today and it was technically yesterday in the States?
but you're right. Yeah, Taco Falls is. I just wanted to mention that just for, you know, apropos of nothing, that just so people know that I'm not even including Taco in the 15 players, you know, even because if it was, he wouldn't count against the actual roster. But even not including him, they already have 15 guys there.
Yeah, they do, yeah. And I'm not too sure how that's going to move forward. I'm going to give them a B overall, simply because of the way they quickly pivoted to make this roster better once they realized Hayward was going to bounce. I want to give them lower because of the whole Hayward situation, but you have to give them credit for not overpaying to keep him at the same time. So in one hand you give, in the other take away. I'd say a B's fair. They've got two great veterans. They've added some championship know-how to the team. They've added a huge upgrade to the bench point guard position, and they've added bench scoring as well. So yeah, I feel like a B is a fairly reasonable assessment.
So I give them a C+, with the caveat that I'll give them a B- if they get the trade exception for Hayward. That's the only caveat. So if they get the trade exception for Hayward, they will get up to a B-, but otherwise I landed at C+, and a lot of it has to do with, again, what they're going to do with the trade exceptions they get from these other deals too. Like right now, that deal with Memphis and Portland is a loss. You know, threw away the 30th pick pretty much. You dumped Cantor and you didn't get much back in return. I think you got a heavily, heavily protected second round pick and that was it. But you also got that trade exception. So that could be swayed based on what you do with the trade exception. But if you don't do anything with it, which they haven't yet, I can't give you any points for it. So that's a huge, huge failure of a deal. The Poirier deal, you had to send a couple things away to dump him off and you had to send cash to Oklahoma City to dump Poirier. So, and you didn't get anything out of that. So those two factor into my grade as well, of like kind of negative deals, if you want to phrase it that way, versus positive and negative. You have two positive deals in the Thompson deal and the Jeff Teague deal, and about three negative deals in there, and the positive deal, I guess, if you want to throw in the Tatum extension as well. So I think, to be honest, C+ is being really fair when you look at the fact that there's three in the negative column, three in the positive column. I guess two minor ones with Cantor and Poirier, but a major one with Hayward, and then you have two average ones with Teague and Thompson, and even like maybe even I'll give you a slightly above average on Tatum. So I think that's why C plus is where I land at.
I mean, that's completely fair. The one thing that I kind of had Cantor and Poirier as very marginal pros because you come away with two TPEs from those deals. So I kind of look at that as, hey, they're beneficial. If you let them expire, they expire. If you use them, then great. So I didn't look at that as too negative. Plus, they were two contracts for guys that, you know, Cantor was great. He was a great personality. I like watching him on Instagram and stuff. But at times on the floor, he was unplayable. And Poirier, I remember him more for his dress sense than what I ever will do for what he did on the floor, because there was so little of that.
No, I don't mind losing the players at all. Like, the players, I'm with you. Who cares? I didn't think either of them were a very major part of the team. What I'm more concerned about is the kind of assets they had to give up with Cantor. I don't know how much of a part of the deal it was in the first place, because it was obviously they just couldn't make all their picks. But you really dumped that 30th pick for pretty much nothing. You know, the way it actually worked out was, you dump the 30th pick to Memphis. You give you give Cantor to Portland, and you get a 2023 second round pick and the trade exception. So you're right. The trade exception has some value, but I'm not going to give them credit for the trade exception until they do something with the trade exception. So we can circle back to, I guess, my offseason grade once they use that, and we'll figure it out from there. But like, I'm not going to give them the credit for it until they use it. And like the Poirier thing, they dump Poirier and cash to Oklahoma City, and they got a top 55 protected second round pick. I don't think they're getting that pick, to be honest with you. Oklahoma City would have to be one of the five best teams in the league for them to get that. I don't see that happening. So they basically get nothing for Poirier. They have to give up cash in the process. And yeah, they get the trade exception. But again, are they going to even use that, or is it just going to expire? It's the same deal. So that's why I view those as slight negatives, because I feel like that what you're giving up is more than what you're getting until you make the most of that trade exception. And then what do you have to give up alongside that trade exception? I don't think you can trade players with trade exceptions. So it's going to have to be picks. And can they really get anything worthwhile for what they have as far as picks are concerned? I don't really know. So I have my doubts that they're going to find a lot of value with these trade exceptions, at least these small ones they're getting. I think maybe there might be something with Jeff Teague potentially being a sign and trade and filling one of these trade exceptions. I don't know. That obviously hasn't been finalized yet, but we will see. Overall, though, that's why I view those as just slight negatives. I just don't think, right, unless until they do something with those, they're getting real value back.
Yeah, and that's fair enough. And there isn't enough roster spaces to use both of those TPEs anyway, because you can only use one per trade. So one of those two are probably going to go unused unless they use them very early next offseason. The timing, I don't know, are they still a full 12 months for the TPE, or are they going to change the rules because of the shortened season? There's a lot of questions that can go into
that. You know, yeah, that is all to be determined. I would assume they're going to change the rules and have it time out some. Well, maybe they won't. Maybe they'll just give teams and say, you know what, you can just have it for a year. It doesn't matter, because it's one thing to extend it, and like they did this year and say, well, we had this hiatus, so we'll extend the trade exception to be, more than a year and time out with the time of the offseason when you did it. But it's another thing to shorten it. So part of me thinks that the NBA might just say, you know what, you can have it for the full year until the start of next season, which, by the way, doesn't make a huge difference because, there's still the whole factor of, when trades really don't happen at the beginning of the season anyway. Like, that's not something that happens a lot in the NBA. So I think they'll just say, you know what, you can have it for a year. But again, like you said, it's all still to be determined, really.
Yeah, and if they have it through next offseason, then maybe they all get used and maybe they can make some at work. If you want to move on from Carson Edwards, can you use Carson Edwards to take on a bigger salary and absorb it into that Cantor contract? Or if you have the Hayward one, can you package a few young guys and bring them all in to absorb a $30 million contract? So it's all going to swing on roundabouts for the next few months, but it's definitely going to become quite clear how this offseason went by the time the season's over. But I do feel the Celtics are entering the season as a more well-rounded team. That's going to be a better way of saying it. They're not entering it in a better position, but they're far more well-rounded than what they were entering the league last year.
Absolutely, and I said that as well. I think that the loss of Hayward definitely makes them less talented. But it comes with a few caveats, the first of which to me is they're a better team than they were in the playoff last year because Hayward really wasn't around and he wasn't fully healthy. So the team you saw this as for the, playing for the Celtics in the postseason, this team next season is going to be better than that one. And it comes with the other caveat of the chemistry could work better. The team fit, the roster construction could work better with Hayward off. I would allow the possibility for that. I don't know that I believe it fully because I think Hayward's a really good basketball player and it's good to have really good basketball players. But, you know, I'd throw that out there too. So, you know, there are a couple reasons that you can feel more optimistic about this team than you otherwise would. Obviously, young player development is a thing there too. Romeo Langford, how good can he really be if you really give him minutes? Can Tatum get even better? Can Brown get even better? You know, these other young guys that you bring in. Robert Williams, how good can he be? How much is he going to improve over the offseason? So these are definitely factors to me in looking at the team and maybe they can be better. But and those are the caveats I throw out to the Hayward situation because, you know, overall he is a great player that you're losing and it's hard to make up for that. But there are things, reasons that you should still be optimistic about it. So thank you, Adam, for joining us. We really appreciate you making the time coming on the podcast. We hope to talk to you again soon.
Yeah, man, I enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
All right, guys. You can follow Adam on Twitter at AdamTaylorNBA. Be sure to check him out. You can follow me on Twitter at ByKDoyle. Follow the pod on Twitter at WicketSmartPod. Check everything over at GuyBostonSports. And thanks for listening, guys. We'll see you next week.